What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Thankful, as always, that you have chosen to spend your time with us today. Looking forward to the program in which we will continue our off-season recap series looking at the Giants with Art Stapleton of The Record and NorthJersey.com, and also the Broncos with Nikki Javala of the Denver Post. A couple really good interviews that we'll bring to you in just a minute. Before I do, I need to let you know, as I do each week at the top of the program, I need to implore you, really, to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. While you're there, leave us a rating and a review. That will allow us to reach as many listeners as possible. And, well, I guess along the same lines, it'll ensure that as many listeners as possible never miss an episode. So much appreciated your cooperation, that is, in the matter. And, you know, I'm not going to get to a ton of the new news around the NFL because, A, it's going to start coming nonstop with camps back in session and the smell of football in the air, the sounds of football back with us. And because I don't know if this podcast is going to post for a couple days. So I'll just kind of steer clear of that. But as always, I would encourage you to check out our website. You really need to have it bookmarked and have it open all the time, profootballweekly.com. And then, of course, check us out on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. That way you will never miss the latest goings-on around the league. So let's jump right in with Nikki Javala of the Denver Post. And a couple disclaimers I did record. Today is Wednesday. I recorded this podcast Sunday. So I don't think any breaking Broncos news has happened between now and then, and frankly, between the remaining lag before the show goes up. But I would just kind of ask for your patience and understanding as I try and get all these interviews done. And then I just want to—I teed up Nikki with a question that you'll see we kind of disagreed on. So a very respectful disagreement, and Nikki is a lot more in tune with this club than I am. But we see the quarterback competition a little bit differently. So I'll let you hear Nikki's side, and then maybe I'll tell you before I introduce the interview with Art Stapleton how I see the matter. But first things first, let's listen to Nikki Javala of the Denver Post. And thank you once again to her for all the awesome insight today. It is my pleasure to welcome in Nikki Javala, NFL Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post, also the author of the 2017 Broncos scouting report in our Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine that's on newsstands now. And Nikki is working from Starbucks on this Sunday morning, so we're going to bear with her and maybe any random dogs we hear barking in the background. Nikki, what's happening?
Not much. Sorry about the dogs, but I needed caffeine, and anybody who knows me knows this is really my second office, so...
Oh, gosh, I'm the exact same way. So, yeah, please don't apologize, especially during your downtime that we are so rudely interrupting. We got a couple days left until training camp. We'll just we'll jump right in with Nikki. Make sure you're following her on Twitter real quick, at Nikki. It's NikiJHABVALA. And, Nikki, you tell me, how much are the odds stacked against Trevor Siemian winning the job in camp, and is that about what you'd expect for the former Northwestern quarterback who's already defied quite a few odds to get to where he is now?
I don't think the odds are stacked against him at all. I think there's this myth that just because Paxton Lynch is a first-round selection that he will be handed the keys to the offense. I don't think that's the case at all. I think this is very much based on what these two can do on the field in training camp and in preseason, and it'll come down to multiple factors. You know, the physical ability, who is more comfortable out there, who has mastered the footwork, who is making the throws, who has a better rapport with their receivers. It'll come down to leadership, who is more comfortable in the huddle, in the locker room, who do the other players feel more comfortable with. And I think it also comes down to work ethic. Who is putting in those extra hours? Who is looking at the playbook, you know, long after practice ends? So I don't think the odds are stacked against him at all. I think Paxton has made significant strides year over year, and that was expected and hoped for as a second-year quarterback. But I firmly believe that Trevor Siemian still has the edge in this just because of his experience. And I still think, you know, this offense suits him as well as it suits Paxton Lynch. So we'll see what happens in preseason, but I don't think he's, you know, behind in this race at all.
Okay, that's fascinating, and certainly the experience part is big. And I guess just to clarify, for John Elway, don't you think there would have to be a bit of an ego check if his the round one pick that he traded up to grab didn't win the job out of camp? I'm not trying to say they're going to tilt things in his advantage, but then you also factor in a brand new coaching staff, and there's no allegiances there. So I guess that's kind of how I was teeing it up. But it is interesting to hear you say you don't think those are going to be real factors.
Yeah, no, you do consider that. My feeling is if it's a fair fight, then Trevor Siemian will win the job. If politics get involved, then, yeah, they could decide to start Paxton Lynch in week one, even just to see what the young kid has.
Right.
If he has a long-term future with the team, what they have in him and what that means going forward at that position. But you have to also remember, John Elway drafted Trevor Siemian, too. He wasn't plucked off the street as just, you know, another camp body. He was selected in the seventh round. I get that it's not the same investment, but they did decide to use the pick on him, so that counts for something.
Sure.
And they did decide to start him over Mark Sanchez last year, so that's another big something there.
Yeah.
There's a lot more at stake here, and that's kind of what I wrote in my last piece today. There's a lot more at stake here than just 2017.
Mm-hmm.
They're also they always do this, and this is how LA operates, is looking a few years down the road. And who wins this battle says a lot about their future at that position and the future of these two players involved. I mean, if Paxton Lynch doesn't win it, does that mean you shelve a first-round quarterback? Will he be traded down the line if Trevor Siemian doesn't win it? Do you keep him because he's experienced and basically playing on pennies, or do you try to trade him? I mean, quarterbacks are worth their weight in gold in the NFL, as we know. So
right.
There's a lot to consider in this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you use the term fair fight, and if it is one, it'll be Trevor Siemian's kind of job to lose, if you will. It's only fair to point out that really it wasn't a fair fight, not the competition so much, but just sort of the hand that Trevor Siemian was dealt with the offensive line and the run game. He never really had a chance and still put up at least respectable numbers. So I guess we'll go back to the quarterbacks here in a little bit. We're chatting with Nikki Javala, of course, of the Denver Post, also the author of the Broncos team report in the Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine. But let's just get right to it, Nikki. What did you see? And I know they go hand in hand, but what was the bigger issue last year? Was it the running backs? Was it the backfield? Or was it the offensive line that didn't really give them a chance? And which are you more confident has been sufficiently addressed so that it's not sort of a limiting factor again this year?
Well, you'd like to think it's the offensive line. But, you know, they thought last year they had addressed it. They signed Russell Okung. They added Donald Stevenson, who played in a similar system in Kansas City before he came over to Denver. And they thought they had addressed it. If you remember the Super Bowl offensive line, they hung together, which was amazing given the circumstances. But that front five hadn't played a single snap together before they took the field for week one.
Wow.
Evan Mathis was signed late. They had, you know, a lot of young guys on the line, but amazingly they held it together. But it was a total, you know, hodgepodge, and there were, you know, hiccups along the way. Last year, mm-hmm. they hoped to have a more sound line, and it just did not work at all. The edges were, you know, their weakest points. But now Okung's gone in San Diego. Donald Stevenson, his job is on the line right now. They brought in, you know, bigger guys up front, Menelik Watson, Ron Leary. They signed Garrett Bowles in the first round. So on paper, they have upgraded. Now that could pan out to be something completely different, because we've seen how they, you know, the upgrades on paper, how they, you know, end up as the season progresses. But
right.
That's where they needed to get better the most, and that's where they hope to, because it trickles down from there. You know, Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch, you know, while they were trying to, you know, fill the shoes for Peyton Manning, which is an almost impossible task no matter who's in there,
right.
They also didn't get much protection, and they didn't get much support from the run game. And the run game didn't get much support from the offensive line. So there's that trickle-down effect, and they really want to make sure they're better up front.
So you've talked about the earnest moves that they've made from bringing in Watson, and of course Leary spent a bunch of money there to drafting Garrett Bowles in round one. So John Elway's recent high round draft picks haven't exactly paid early dividends for the Broncos, at least from my estimation. How critical is it that changes this year with Garrett Bowles, and then also we'll get to DeMarcus Walker in a little bit. But even as tough of a position as that is to slide right into, I'd have to assume the expectation is certainly that Garrett Bowles will be in the lineup week one.
Yeah. I mean, actually, John Elway's high round draft picks have fared quite well. It's the offensive side that hasn't kind of lived up to the defensive side. You have to remember, he drafted Von Miller, he drafted Shane Ray, he drafted Bradley Roby, and all those guys have really exceeded expectations in my mind. You know, Shane Ray really had a breakout season last year, and he's expected to do even more this season and fully replacing DeMarcus Ware. But the offensive side, his selections in the first two rounds haven't quite lived up to, you know, what you would expect, especially given that he was a Hall of Fame quarterback. I always think it's amazing that somebody of Elway's stature and of his history as a player has done so much better on the defensive side just with his selections and building arguably one of the greatest defenses in the league,
right,
than he has on offense. Now, you have to remember he also built the most prolific offense in history in 2013 with Peyton Manning. But that a lot of that was Peyton himself. But yeah, this year is huge. I mean, picking Garrett Bowles in a year when, you know, offensive line talent is relatively weak, it's a huge risk. But I think in many ways they had to take it. You know, there was just the talent on the offensive line in general on the open market in the draft. And the pickings were slim, and they need help desperately. That's where they needed the most help immediately. And Garrett Bowles, I think they really liked what they saw in him on the field, but even more so what they saw in him just in talking to him. He's an older offensive lineman because of his background. He started at JUCO, then he moved on to Utah. But so far, he's been a huge asset, literally and figuratively,
right,
to the field in the locker room. Guys have taken to him. And I think they really like what they see in him. But we'll see. You know, I think coming in as a rookie on the offensive line is extremely difficult. You know, probably more so than most other positions aside from quarterback. So he's going to have his work cut out for him. But he made significant strides in minicamp and OTAs. I mean, he kept taking on more and more snaps as the weeks went on. It was a clear sign that they're really prepping him to be a full go when in week one, and you would expect that given that they drafted him in the first round.
Sure. And am I safe to assume that so it's more or less a two-horse race, maybe a three-horse race, actually, on the right side with, you mentioned, Stevenson and, of course, Manelik Watson, and then also, I guess, maybe Ty Sombrilo is a factor over there, and then Bowles, they're hoping, is going to be the plug-and-play blindside guy?
Yeah, I think, you know, the right side is interesting because they did sign Manelik Watson, who is, you know, his American football experience is rather limited when you
right.
think about it, because he came over from England, he played in college. He was actually a former college basketball player, and kind of, you know, he was taken under the wing by Chris Long at a small school and then kind of worked his way up. He's a behemoth of a man. He's absolutely enormous. But in his 4 years at Oakland, before he arrived at Denver, he dealt with a string of injuries. So the key for him is staying healthy. And if he can stay healthy, I believe he gets the right tackle position. I mean, they signed him as a free agent for
right.
that intent. Donald Stevenson, they signed him for that intent last year, but then they had him restructure his contract this year. So he got half of his guaranteed salary, and he can earn the other half, $2 million. If he makes the team. So he's got a carrot there, but, you know, they save $2 million if he's not on the roster. Tyson Brilo, they're giving him every chance to kind of win this job. You know, he was their second round pick in 2015 out of Colorado State. And he just, you know, he had a lot of injuries early in his career. He dealt with an elbow injury, a shoulder injury. And they believe that's kind of what's held them back. But last year, it's him and Donald Stevenson were kind of tag teaming there on the right side. It was just kind of a disaster, frankly.
Yeah.
But he is a second round pick, you know, and this is kind of a make or break year for him. But to me, the edge goes to Menelik on the right side, and then, you know, Garrett Bowles kind of winning it on the left.
Got it. And obviously, Nikki, the reason we're going so hard on the offensive line, just so our listeners understand, no, I get it, it's not the most riveting subject matter, but it really is what derailed this team last year, and they really have went all in on trying to get it fixed again. Of course, they have Matt Paradise, the excellent center inside, although I know he's coming off surgery, and Ronald Leary, you know, was really good with the Cowboys whenever he had the chance, so they'll probably feel fairly good about the interior. Let me just ask you, and I know it's a big if, we just discussed how big of an if, but If the O-line does steady, at least to an adequate level, what are reasonable expectations for that run game for C.J. Anderson coming off the meniscus tear and Jamal Charles, the newcomer, and Devontae Booker looking for the sophomore bump?
I think that group has a tremendous opportunity. I think they could be a huge asset in this offense. You know, everybody thinks that with McCoy coming back, they're just going to be passing all the time. And that's never been the case with McCoy's offenses. You look back even to his years with the Broncos, you know, he helped turn one of the worst running games into one of the top in the league. And they need that. With two young quarterbacks, you know, if this offensive line remains solid and they're in sync, both the run game and the offensive line, I think there's a tremendous opportunity to really fuel the offense on the ground. And they need that. The young quarterbacks, for all the heat they took last year, you know, you have to put it into context. They didn't have much protection. They didn't have much support. The run game, as Gary Kubiak said himself many times after many games, was non-existent.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all connected. But they need to get some production on the ground. I mean, this team has lacked that for years now. And losing C.J. Anderson midway through last season was a tremendous blow. I'm curious to see where Jamal Charles is in terms of health, because if he's anywhere close to where he was a couple of years ago, man, they have some serious talent back there.
Yeah.
And I think Devontae Booker is another guy to watch. You know, first year for most players, it's hard just making the transition, not to just the speed of the game, the playbook, but just also the expectation. And I think we could see a lot more out of him. And I think having more talent around CJ will kind of, you know, boost his game. You know, kind of gives you, you know, a nice little kick in the butt. Not that he needed it per se, but it kind of puts the whole group on, you know, gives the competition fuels them all. So
sure.
I think that group could make tremendous strides.
Excited to see, particularly with Jamal Charles, of course, Nikki, just if he can get into a specialized role. I mean, you talk about CJ as potentially the early down guy. Booker has a little bit of a fire lit under him, and it's easy to forget. I believe Devontae was also coming off of 2015 knee surgery, so maybe 2 years removed from that, he's a little bit stronger. But that is a unit that will be under the microscope, obviously. We have a couple minutes left here with Nikki Javala of the Denver Post. Nikki, what does Von Miller have to do off the field to ensure that there's no slack remaining from DeMarcus Ware's retirement in the locker room as a leader? Does he have a long ways to go there?
No, not at all. I think maybe Von didn't get enough credit for his leadership just because they did have DeMarcus Ware, who was kind of like, you know, I don't want to say dead mom, but he was he was the guy in the locker room. You know,
right.
He was that veteran guys looked up to. I mean, he had the track record and the credibility that they would go to him for anything. But I think Von has also been a leader himself. He's just very different in his ways from DeMarcus Ware. But I think guys look up to him the same way. I mean, Shane Ray even said this, that, you know, maybe he doesn't get enough credit for what he is, for what he's done in that locker room. I think he's one of those guys that kind of leads by example. I mean, this guy puts in tremendous work. He studies nonstop. And the younger guys, they can approach him with any question, with anything they need. He's, to me, I've always viewed him as that kid in high school who is friends that popular kid who's friends with everybody, right? Gets along with the nerds, the chucks, everybody. And that's really how he is. I mean, he's kind of he's the backbone of not just the defense, but the whole team. Everybody right. kind of feeds off Von Miller. So I don't think he has to really change much at all or do any more. I think his work ethic, his example, his approachability is kind of what leads. That said, I still think they need somebody on the offensive side. If you'll remember last year, there were some tensions, and I think there's tensions with any team as they mm-hmm. lose and frustration builds, but you know, the defense still playing at an elite level and the offense really struggling to get together, to get it together. I think, you know, there was kind of that dividing line between them, and they really need a strong voice on that end. You would think it would come from the quarterback, but they are young there.
Right.
If Trevor Siemian gets a nod again to start, I think he has a tremendous window to really fill that void. But I also think somebody like Demaryius, one of the most veteran players on this team who's had experience with multiple starting quarterbacks, really needs to take that vocal lead and step up mm-hmm. on the offensive side.
Nikki, how did Demaryius, it's been a couple months now, but how did Demaryius take to the, we'll call it gentle prodding, I guess, from his new coach, Vance Joseph? He wants him to dominate on a down-to-down basis. Vance wasted a little time coming in and saying, did Thomas take that as kind of a kick in the butt, or how did that go, and what do you anticipate will be the result of that?
He seemed to. We'll see. I mean, we've only seen limited work on the field so far, but you know, I think he needed that. I think he understands that Vance was right. And I think, you know, over the last 2 years, people fail to realize that everything that was going on with Demaryius, this is no way to, you know, excuse anything. But, you know, he did have some pretty strong numbers. I mean, everybody looked at the drops, of course. But he did have over 1,000 yards last season when the offense as a whole was kind of a mess a lot of games. And he was dealing with a lot of stress outside of football, you know, his family and everything. And his health. He dealt with a hip injury, and he managed to play every single game with a really bad hip. You could see it in practice. He's always fidgeting with his hip, which has bothered him for years, really. He says he feels good this year, better than he has in a long time. So I think he was fine with a not-so-subtle nudge from Vance, and, you know, mm-hmm. you hope that he kind of heeds the advice, because when we saw him last year, he was really fired up. That's when he had some of his best games. So I think he knows. I think he's dealing with a lot more than some of the other guys, and he's out there every game. So it's hard to fault him there. So
yeah,
we'll
totally.
See, though. I think the biggest thing for him is the health, honestly. If he can minimize the pain of his hip, if he feels like he can do all the things he wants to, if he's not worried about getting popped on that side of his body during a tackle, I mean, mm-hmm. that's a big thing.
Yeah, no doubt, and I know us fantasy football geeks were excited to hear about the re-emphasis on the catch-and-run Demaryius, the bubble screen Demaryius, because we've seen him at his best on occasion when he's getting the opportunities to do that, and it sounds like that is going to be a priority, sort of getting back to that a little bit more. What about Carlos Henderson, the third-rounder? Mike McCoy has turned out some pretty productive third-round rookies, from Keenan Allen to Eric Decker, and I think the list goes on a little bit. What do you think about Henderson and his chances to potentially slide into that WR3 role and contribute right away?
I think it's a big chance. I think that's one of the position battles that is not getting enough attention because so many eyes are on the quarterback. But that number three position, and they've been looking for that guy for the last 2 years.
Right.
You know, if you remember last year, Jordan Norwood kind of fell into that role, but he struggled throughout. But they need that guy. They need somebody to be a go-to in the slot, or just to be another reliable guy behind Demaryius and Emmanuel. It's a make or break year for Cody Latimer. He's entering the final year of his rookie deal. And if he doesn't show out in camp this year, then, you know, that could be it.
It's also
a big year for Benny Fowler, who was kind of a training camp superstar in 2015. He struggled with injuries last year, and he had a couple drops that really hurt them throughout the season. in 2016, but he's been working hard. I mean, he's been posting videos of, you know, some of his footwork sessions with a couple of gurus, and last night he was out there working with Rod Smith, which I would think can only help your chances out there.
Right.
But yeah, Carlos Henderson, he was drafted high for a reason. They liked what they saw in him. He's strong. He's fast. He's a big guy. I think he has a really good chance of winning that. And this is one of the emphasis they have on offense. They wanted to get bigger and stronger on the lines, but they also wanted to get faster. Mm-hmm. Carlos Henderson, Isaiah McKenzie, they bring that. So their arrival kind of, you know, gives the veterans kind of that nudge, that competitive push that, you know, could bring out the best in them this camp.
It'll be fun to watch. And Nikki Javala of the Denver Post, we appreciate you so much for your time. Just on the way out, and make sure you're following Nikki on Twitter at Nikki Javala, Javvala. Nikki, I have to ask just very quickly, there is a quarterback battle. Is it a two-horse race, or is this year's Mr. Irrelevant have a chance to be quite relevant? Because I know Vance Joseph said he was his favorite quarterback in the draft and also the 253rd pick.
I think to start, it's definitely a two-horse race. I mean, yeah. Chad Kelly is starting to get back into throwing. We'll see how things progress later in the season. I think it'll make next year very interesting, because I think Chad Kelly, he has a lot to offer.
Yes,
he dropped in the draft because of injuries and off-the-field stuff, but if he can recover nicely and, you know, kind of keep everything together off-the-field, it's going to be year three could be really interesting in Denver.
Man, that would be remarkable. Elway has the seventh rounder Simeon starting last year. What if it was Kelly starting next year? It really would be something. Nikki, that's all the time we have. Thank you again so much for taking time out of your Sunday. I hope you get off to camp safely and the season gets off on a good note for you personally. And I know that we'll be reaching out to you soon for some more info on the Broncos if you're willing to provide it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, the pleasure is ours. That's Nikki Javala of the Denver Post. Also, check out her work in the Pro Football Weekly 2017 Preview Magazine. It's available on newsstands now.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, thank you once again to Nikki Javala of the Denver Post for taking time out of her Sunday to join the PFW podcast. And I did mention when I sort of teed up the interview that we had one agree-to-disagree moment, and it was right at the top in the Trevor Siemian versus Paxton Lynch debate. Look, Nikki is the Denver insider, and I'm not doubting her info or her opinion, but I just want to sort of tell the other side of the story. It's not breaking news that Paxton Lynch is more talented and has better pedigree than Trevor Siemian. Obviously, John Elway traded up in round one last year to acquire him. Siemian, one of the last picks in the seventh round. So there's a huge gap in terms of what these guys have just from a physical standpoint. The problem with Paxton Lynch last year is that the mental side didn't catch up anywhere near as fast as the physical side. But in addition to that pedigree and kind of that inherent incentive to get him in the lineup as soon as he's proved that he's ready, it's a new coaching staff. So whatever advantage Siemian entered camp with last year because of the familiarity with the system under Gary Kubiak from the year prior, you'd think that goes out the window, and I would think that Paxton Lynch's athleticism is what Mike McCoy wants for his offense. Again, these are just my opinions, but they happen to be a little different than Nikki's, so I did want to clarify my point on that. And again, to thank Nikki, it should be fun to watch how that quarterback situation plays out. And just one more reminder that if the offensive line and the run game doesn't improve, it really may not matter whether it's Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, or me behind center. So fortunately, the Broncos won't have to worry about that last option. But anyway, now I've sort of let you know where my thinking is on this one. And you don't have to listen to me blabber anymore. Actually, you do for one more minute because I want to talk about our great sponsor, Loot Crate. Be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. And enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. August's Loot Crate theme is Kingdom. That means the franchises are The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and Lord of the Rings. That means that you can get an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month that include all of these franchises. It's the best surprise you know is coming. It's really a lot of fun to go to your mailbox. You know there's a crate coming, but you don't know what's going to be in it. It's going to have one featured franchise t-shirt, but there's other kinds of wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. There's lots of other options, too. For the fanatical fashionista, try loot wear for your pets. You want to geek them out? Try loot pets. If you want to go fancy and bigger, get an even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So again, you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. A lot of great franchises this month. I'm kind of torn between The Legend of Zelda and The Lord of the Rings. I guess that means we can't go wrong with whatever shows up in our mailbox. That's the beauty of Loot Crate. Thank you once again to them. And up next, we have Art Stapleton of The Record and NorthJersey.com talking Giants. The Pro Football Weekly offseason recap series moves to the New York Giants, and we're checking in with Art Stapleton, the NFL and Giants writer for The Record and NorthJersey.com. Check him out on Twitter at @Art_Stapleton. What's up, my man? Thanks for taking time. Last precious few hours of the offseason as we record.
Yeah, no doubt, Arthur. It's always nice to join a show and you share the first name. We're few and far between, so we got to represent.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'll tell you what, Arthur, like your name, the Giants' defense, great right now. Offense last year, not so good. One of my biggest regrets then, and I'm just going to, at the top, I've got a few little nits to pick with the Giants' offseason, and I'll be curious to hear what you think.
I
wonder how Jerry Reese could refuse to address this offensive line. He's assuming it's going to get better from within. Do you think it can? And if it doesn't, is there anything more that can be squeezed from Eli after a real down year?
Well, I mean, I think, would they have liked to upgrade the offensive line? Yes. But what I heard from inside the building, not necessarily Jerry Reese, but the feeling was that they knew on the market that they would have to pay $2 on the dollar for a guy who was going to come in and play left tackle for a short period of time.
Okay.
Andrew Whitworth. I mean, you look at what the Rams paid him. And they didn't like their options there. And then when it went into the draft, it was worse. The options were worse. So I think they knew right from the bat that they would have to rely on what they have. And look, you have to rely on your personnel department a little bit. You know, this is Eric Flowers' third year. He's a top 10 pick. Is it a blind leap of faith, somewhat, but I guess they can fall back on the idea and say, look, worst case scenario, he's exactly what he was last year, and right tackle is exactly what he was last year in Bobby Hart, and they won 11 games and made the playoffs. So if that is worst case scenario, I think they'll build from there. But these guys, Hart and Flowers, are still young guys. I mean, you could make the argument that Eric Flowers would have been the best offensive tackle prospect had he stayed in college for 2 years and come out this year as opposed to 2 years ago when he came out early. So, yeah, he's rolling the dice. Reese is rolling the dice. And if the offensive line doesn't improve and the offense doesn't improve, well, then it's going to fall at the feet of Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo.
Right, and good points there for sure. It's easy to forget how young Eric Flowers especially is, and in fairness, I should mention they did sign DJ Fluker, the former first-round bust with the Chargers, so it's not as if they did nothing, but it looks to be the same group heading into this year. My one other small, minor issue, and you tell me again, it's not like anyone cares what my issues are. The Giants had a really remarkable season last year, but Evan Engram, one of my favorite players in the draft, all I've heard is that they want to make him an inline tight end. I see a prototypical move guy who should be all over the formation. Am I hearing things wrong, or is that the plan for the first-round pick, Evan Engram?
Sure. Not that you're hearing things wrong, but I think people kind of twisted. Mike Sullivan, the offensive coordinator, came out, I guess it was rookie minicamp, and said, look, you know, we hear all this stuff about how Engram is a wide receiver, he's not a tight end. We believe he's a wide receiver. We believe he can put his hand in the dirt. We believe he can play in line. We believe he can play detached on the wing. We think he can split out wide. We're going to use him all over the place. So exactly what you said, they're going to use him as a move tight end. Okay. I mean, I don't believe that they're going to stick him as a wide receiver, and I certainly don't think that they are going to put him in line and say, okay, Von Miller's coming off the edge in October in Denver in prime time. Evan Engram, your responsibility is going to be blocking Von Miller and helping the right tackle.
Right.
That's not going to happen. So I do believe that they will carve out a role for Engram, and it really depends on how much he can pick up. But I think you're going to be more pleased with the way they utilize Engram than what maybe people said out of rookie minicamp and kind of taking Mike Sullivan's comments and running with them.
Okay, I'm thrilled to hear that because I thought he looks like one of the great mismatch weapons in this draft, and I think the prospect of adding him in this offense, I just don't know. Defenses are obviously going to have to pick their poison. It should be fun. Maybe some similarities to Brandon Marshall early on, whatever position you call him, but long-term
right.
Future seems very, very bright, certainly for Evan Engram. Enough about the disappointments, Art. I love Darian Thompson, too. I know his rookie year is a disappointment because of injury, but is he poised to join All-Pro Landon Collins on the back end? I know they were actually pretty pleased with what they got in Thompson's absence as well, correct?
Yeah, Andrew Adams was an undrafted rookie from UConn last year. I think he started 11 games. Pro Football Focus loved him, graded him so high last year, Andrew Adams. You know, and he did well. I mean, he really did well, and it certainly helped if you had an All-Pro Defensive Player of the Year candidate playing next to you.
Right.
Look, Thompson is definitely one of those question marks going into the season. You know, I spoke with him back during OTAs, and you know, he was feeling good, and he looked like he was really moving around well. He had the Liz Frank injury last year, tried coming back from it, and essentially re-injured it in practice and just couldn't come back. Looked pretty good. Now, it's interesting, at the end of minicamp, both he and Eli Apple had been nursing a hamstring. Both of them had quote-unquote, what Ben McAdoo called an illness, and they were not at minicamp. They were in the building, but they were not at minicamp. They were not on the field. So I haven't seen Thompson. The beat writers haven't seen Thompson since OTAs. So you hope that he looks good and he's right back where he needs to be. But that competition between Thompson and Andrew Adams will be very interesting. But Thompson is really more he's a free safety, what they hope to be, a ball hawk.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had 21 interceptions in college, something like that. They hope he can be the perfect complement to Landon Collins. But right now, it's kind of hard to say. I think you've got to look at it as a 70-30 proposition that Thompson will regain the form of where he was last year. Guarded optimism, I would say, with Thompson.
Okay, and Thompson, of course, for our listeners who may not know, the third rounder last April, I guess it would have been last May, out of Boise State. As Art said, I believe either 19, 21 career interceptions, unbelievable ball production, and he's a big dude. He's tall and he's long. Just a really interesting prospect, so we'll be following him closely. We're chatting with Art Stapleton of The Record and North Jersey. Make sure you're checking him out at @Art_Stapleton on Twitter. Are we talking enough about the loss of Jonathan Hankins? I mean, I know he signed late in the process with the Colts, and the Giants spent a second rounder on Dalvin Tomlinson. Your thoughts on what that change means for what? I don't know if they finished number one in the league in run defense, but if not number one, right near the top.
Yeah, I think they were number two, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you know, second fewest points allowed in the league behind the Patriots as a defense. Look, you know, Hankins was a good player. I don't think I've known Hankins since he came in as a rookie second rounder at Ohio State. I mean, he's a good team player, does a lot of the dirty work inside. Certainly helped that he was playing next to All-Pro Damon Harrison. You know, you play a guy next to Snacks, and Snacks is drawing all the double teams. Right. So maybe not as productive last year as Hankins wanted to be. But I think when you have the ends that the Giants have in Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivier Vernon and Snacks Harrison, I mean, if you're a defensive tackle in this league and you have something to prove, or a young player like Dalvin Tomlinson, this is the perfect scenario. Yeah. And I think two other names to watch – former third round pick from Syracuse, Jay Bromley, really has not taken that next step in his career. He was one of the last Tom Coughlin draft picks. We know Coughlin's connection to Syracuse through the years. Syracuse and Boston College, it was Tom right. Coughlin. Right. And Robert Thomas is a defensive tackle that the Giants claimed on waivers from Carolina last year. Thomas showed, he came to the Giants and was out, I think, 6 weeks with an illness and didn't even play for 6 weeks. I'm interested to see him. He's been, both Bromley and Thomas have been in the offseason program. They've looked pretty good. I'm interested to see the three of them, Tomlinson and those two guys, playing next to Snacks. And the one thing about Spags, Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, they will use their defensive ends on the inside in pass rush sub packages. Right. So you're looking for a defensive tackle to stop the run, like you said, because I think guys that will move inside, we saw a lot from JPP last year, a lot from Olivier Vernon, mm-hmm. moving the defensive tackle in certain sub-packages. So I'm interested to see. I mean, I don't think the Hankins loss is going to crush them, okay. But it's certainly a hole to fill.
Great call by you. As the football geek that I am, one of my favorite things is a good defensive end who can kick inside and sub and really get after it. But it does beg the question, in my opinion, if I don't think there's many knocks on this defense last year, but if there's one, was Landon Collins the team's best pass rusher after JPP and Olivier Vernon? And if he was, that's okay because he's a special talent. But do you think maybe another more sort of conventional option may emerge that can take advantage of some of the horses they have up front?
Well, I think towards the end of the year, JPP, I mean, once he got hurt and he had the abdomen surgery and the hernia, the sports hernia, right. I mean, their front really took a hit. But Vernon and JPP, another year together, I think you'll get more production from them. But something that the Giants like to do is, because of the coverage ability of their secondary, they can bring their safeties a lot. They like to bring Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie from the slot to try to bring pressure. So that's kind of where those numbers are skewed a little bit, I think, because Collins has those statistics to be able to come in a pass rush setting. I mean, I think he, you know, you're talking about the sacks that he had. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think he had 4 sacks last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But he hadn't had a sack until last year in his career, so he didn't have any as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
But they need more production from their defensive ends. I mean, they got a 5th-round pick in Avery Moss, from Youngstown State, who I think is a bit raw. And they picked up Devin Taylor, who was in a rotation and started, I think, all 16 games last year
right.
for a playoff team in Detroit. So if they can get any production from the guys behind Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivier Vernon, obviously, like you said, you'd like to see that kick up a notch on this defense.
Right, and just to be clear, I'm not really necessarily being critical, because I think Vernon and JPP are the exact type of guys where you have to look past the box score to see the impact that they're making, and Collins falls into that equation too, but I know that the sack numbers weren't astronomical. Art, were you able to find out anything about Devin Taylor? I know last year was a huge disappointment, but really good for the Lions 2 years ago, and he's young, and he has that length and kind of that pass rush ability, or at least has flashed it, that I think every team covets. Why was he still available late in the spring?
A little mind-boggling as far as I could see it, you know. But again, we just talked about Jonathan Hankins and the idea that he was so late. I mean, his asking price was so high. You know, maybe Devin Taylor was looking for an opportunity. We didn't have a chance to talk to him in the spring, so looking forward to that camp. But just the idea of, you know, maybe he was holding out for the best role possible, and then it got to a point where you cross that threshold and you start looking at opportunities and say, you know what, maybe I need to take a one-year deal in a place where I can put up some numbers and and not deal with the kind of pressure that I'm going to deal with on an every down basis with the Detroit Lions. So I'm interested to see Taylor. I mean, it's going to be really fascinating to see how this defense takes shape because of the, you know, 9 returning starters. And you mentioned Hankins. The only other guy was a base starter in Kelvin Shepherd at middle linebacker. Mm-hmm. So they bring everybody back. How many tweaks, how many wrinkles can they put in this defense in year 2 with this group?
Yeah, we know Spagnuolo, if he can, he's going to. Man, he maybe didn't get enough credit for what he did last year. Just such an imaginative play caller, and it was fun to watch this group gel so quickly and just be an absolute force, obviously, by the end of the season. Art, am I crazy for thinking, and maybe crazy is not even the right word in this instance, but I feel like with Brandon Marshall joining Odell, I feel like this is going to be a massive success or a massive failure, and there may not be a lot of room in between. Why do I have that feeling, or do you think that it's off base?
Well, they've gotten off to a good start. Obviously, Odell wasn't at OTAs, so Brandon kind of took center stage. He was at the forefront. But what I do think is that as long as they win, you know, personalities are happy when you win. Mm-hmm. And these are two big personalities. Brandon said all the right things to this point. But like with anything, if they struggle at times and this offense doesn't get off on the right foot, you know the blood will be in the water, Arthur. You know that, you know, again, we are in New York, but the media, travels now. It's everywhere. It doesn't matter. It could be NFL Network, ESPN. People are going to want to go to Odell in his once a week and go to Brandon Marshall and ask about the other. It's going to happen. So I don't think you're far off. I think people, because of Brandon's history, I think people look at what he's done. He's always been good in his first year in the locker room with a team, and he's done well. He did great with the Jets 2 years ago. Then you start hearing the sniping at him last year. You know, the one thing I didn't understand with the Sheldon Richardson, Brandon Marshall, tussles, if people don't know, I mean, Sheldon's been going after Brandon now, saying, I think it was, I have 15 good reasons as to why our team is better this year than last year. That was what Sheldon Richardson said, referencing Brandon's number.
Right.
But the reality is that argument was supposedly at halftime of a game that the Jets were getting blown out in against the Patriots. So I guess Marshall stood up and said, come on, guys, let's go. And Richardson didn't want to hear any of it. So all eyes will be on Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall. And going forward, that's what will define this offense, regardless of what happens in any other spot. As soon as something bad happens, or at least disappointing as far as production goes, we are going to want to hear from Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall. It's just natural.
All right, I have 143 reasons why Sheldon Richardson is the last person that should be stepping into this leadership role for the Jets. That's, of course, the miles per hour in which Sheldon Richardson was arrested recently. And I'm a Mizzou guy. I love the talent, but just such a goofball. We've got a couple minutes left here with Art Stapleton. Make sure you're checking him out on Twitter, @Art_Stapleton, and checking out all his Giants and NFL work in The Record and NorthJersey.com. Let's just stick with Odell for a minute. Story or non-story that he missed the offseason, where do you think he's at entering year 3 after just doing some remarkable stuff to date?
I don't think it's a non-story, but I also don't think it's a big deal. I think Odell Beckham Jr. needs to answer for the punching of the wall in Green Bay, the drop passes, and the idea that the season ended in a disappointment for him. And he was disappointed. So if I'm a Giants fan or I'm the Giants, I'm looking at it going, you know what, whatever he can do in the offseason to get him to the point that the next big moment that he has as a Giant, he comes through for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important thing for this offense and this team as a franchise. You know, you listen to ownership and they talk about how much they love Odell, and, you know, there's a little bit of motivation, I think, from Jerry Reese at the end of last season to say, come on, let's go. It's time to grow up. It's you got to be that. I think Odell will be fine. I think when the pressure goes on, that's when he's going to be judged. Until then, you know, you don't have these off the field issues that, you know, other players around the league, and I don't want to start naming names because we don't know, you know, factually what's correct or not, but Odell's biggest crime in the offseason is going bowling in a group that also included pop star Iggy Azalea, like taking picture of Johnny Manziel when they were both training with the same renowned trainer in Los Angeles. I mean, these are things that, you know, we're not talking about crimes here for Odell Beckham Jr. And if he stays right on the straight and narrow, which you've seen nothing to believe that he's veered from that, then I think he's going to be fine.
Okay, I've got two more for you, Art. They're both on offense. I think that's where most of the questions probably are going to be with this team if they're looking to get back to the playoffs. Did Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo take a bit of a tough love approach with Eli this offseason? I listened in February at the Combine, and it sounds like they wanted to put a lot of the offensive struggles on Eli and not those bookends and non-existent running game. Is that by design, and how do you think Eli takes to it, if I have the right read on it?
Well, I think in the media, and certainly what's said publicly, it's a lot easier to put something on your quarterback when you know you can handle it.
Sure.
You know, I think of Herb Brooks and at least a movie version of Miracle, where, you know, he gives them all a psychological test to find out what his individual players can take. And, you know, he talks about the, you know, he wants to see the Jim Craig who refused to take the test. And hopefully everyone who's listening knows Miracle and has seen the movie. If you haven't, mm-hmm. what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
But bottom line is, I think from a McAdoo and a Giants front office position, if you can't you can criticize Eli Manning. Eli Manning's not going to take it personally. He's going to know where it's coming from. And if you're going to ask Eli Manning who was the biggest problem in the offense last year, Eli Manning's answer is going to be Eli Manning. So
sure.
I think it's a little bit of gamesmanship. I do think Eli needs to raise his game somewhat this year, just based on last year. You know, across the board, they were disappointing. But I don't know necessarily if they threw it all at Eli Manning, but I certainly think there was some plan involved, even though no one will admit it, about, you know what, don't criticize the guys who necessarily won't take it the right way. Make sure you criticize the guy who can stand up and say, look, if they're criticizing me, I have two Super Bowl MVP trophies. All you need to look in the mirror and realize that you need to do better as well.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. If the quarterback's going to get all the accolades, they obviously should get, you know, the harsh criticism too. I get it. Last one for you. I'm going to tee it up through kind of a fantasy football lens, but we want to know, just plain and simple, is this run game going to become any bit of an asset this year? And if so, is it going to be because of Paul Perkins, because of Shane Vereen, because of Wayne Gallman, because of a guy that's not on the roster yet?
I think it will be because of Paul Perkins. I like what I saw at the end of last season. I do think it will also be because of Rhett Ellison,
mm-hmm.
who they signed at that inline tight end. It's going to be Ellison. Ellison, don't be surprised if he's lined up next to Bobby Hart and lined up next to Eric Flowers at tackles and run situations. I do think they made a concerted effort in the offseason to improve this running game, look at what they did well. And if they didn't, I'm not sure that any time that they paid on improving this team wasn't wasted time. So I think Perkins is a guy who can put up numbers. Giants haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since 2012, Arthur. That's been a long time. That's when they were reigning Super Bowl champions. So that was Ahmad Bradshaw. I think Perkins can make a run at 1,000. But again, if they get into situations where they're in 4-minute offense, I'm not convinced that it won't be Shane Vereen on the field And in that case, that's going to take away from fantasy opportunities for Paul Perkins.
Sure. You know, it would seem logical. You said last time they were hugely successful, and now Eli's another 4 or 5 seasons removed. A lot of it hasn't been great. So if they can lean more on the run game and that defense, obviously it would make a lot of sense. Art Stapleton, that was awesome stuff. We really appreciate the time, and we really hope you enjoy your last quiet moments before the storm kicks in. It should be a lot of fun, and again, thank you so much for being on the PFW podcast today.
Absolutely, Arthur. Thank you, and anytime.
All right, that is Art Stapleton. Once again, check him out at therecordinnorthjersey.com and on Twitter at @art_Stapleton. All righty, thank you to Art Stapleton. Always a great treat to get another Arthur on the program. Also awesome to have Nikki Javala talking Broncos. Really enjoyed the guest today, and thank them for being so gracious with their time. And thank you to you guys. Actually, before I thank you guys, let me just thank Loot Crate once more, our awesome sponsor, and let me remind you guys once more, at the risk of beating a dead horse here, please head to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and while you're there, leave us a rating and a review. Other big thanks include Dan Mott, the awesome producer and engineer of this podcast. And okay, now, last but obviously not least, it's you guys, the listeners. We have done 14, I believe. My math isn't great, but I'm pretty sure that today's podcast was number 14 in the off-season recap series. That means we have just 2 to go before we have went all the way across the league and gotten you guys up to speed on all the latest off-season developments, just in time for camps to open and get their first weeks underway. So I hope you guys have had as much fun as I have, and I certainly hope you'll be back for the final 2. I know that fans of last year's Super Bowl will be anxious to hear our last one, obviously. So thank you again. Enjoy the start of camps, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's hope these guys stay healthy. I know injuries are going to happen, but that's still a continuation of the most important aspect of the offseason. Keep these guys healthy a little bit longer, and we'll have a lot of fun breaking it all down at profootballweekly.com. Once again, I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Check me out not only at PFW, but on Twitter at Arthur Arkish, and I look forward to being back with you very soon on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.